Welcome to Leaders in Sustainability, a podcast series by Trianon Scientific Communication. Hello, this is Trianon Scientific Communication. You are listening to our podcast, Leaders in Sustainability. I'm Marcus.
I'm Audrey.
And today we're talking to Alizé CCM. Glad to have you with us. Hello.
Hi, Marcus. Hi, Audrey. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be spending this time with you today.
Well, then let's jump right in. What's your background? What do you do?
Well, I was raised in Belgium, and for the last 8 years, I was living in China and I was working in sustainability over there. My passion is the circular economy, which I discovered in 2014. And since then, it's just been a search, a way to support the environment I am in to get closer to that ideal. It's, of course, always about the process. But so, yes, I think in a nutshell, I started a company in Shanghai called Zero Waste Shanghai. And I was providing trainings and team buildings to companies, and then at some point also consulting work. And so I've done that over there. It was very exciting to do that over there. And I've been back in Belgium now since December 2021, and I'm planning to continue that work here in Europe.
Okay, so for our listener, can you explain to them what is circular economy?
Yes, I love that question. So I always say that to explain the circular economy, I have to explain the linear economy first. The linear economy is the economy we live in today, which means to make anything, we need to extract resources from the earth. We make a product, we sell it, and then at the end, we toss it away, or maybe we recycle a little bit, but it's still very, very little. So there is no like circularity in that process. It's very, very linear. We extract, we make, we use, and then we toss away. And really the waste is not going anywhere. We burn it, but that's not healthy for the environment, but also not for us. Or like we bury it in the soil on which we grow our food. So there is no like circularity. So the circular economy for me is really like we're going to design and think about the end from the very beginning. So when I make a product, I'm going to think at the end of it, how can I take the resources back and how can I reuse them into my supply chain, so that in one way also I'm not like, of course, tarnishing the earth, but also like I'm also not dependent on the market of raw resources. So I have some sort of like, yes, stability. So the circular economy is really about this. It's about like, how can we look at the cycle, like the circular cycles, which happen around us in nature and physics all the time, and how can we replicate them in the way that we as humans live, which is quite a challenge. But that's how I would explain it in the simplest way. I can give an example, like a practical example, if that's maybe more visible.
Yeah, give us an example.
It's a good idea.
Great. Well, I think an easy example is the thing that we all have at home, a phone. So today, when we create a phone, like we don't really think about like all the precious materials that are in there. We just create, make it look very cool and design and efficient, and then we sell it. But very few of us actually, once our phones are dead, we don't really like give them back to the company we bought it from. We maybe recycle it, but it's not the way we recycle our phones is not something yet that has been done, or if even efficiently done. Some companies have started, but so imagine if a company would be like, okay, like we have a phone here, how can we make sure that at the end of its life cycle, it's super easy for our customers to give us the phone back? And how can we make it easy for our factory to disassemble all the materials very easily and reuse up to 90-95% of those materials. So all the precious materials, like we don't have to go mine them anymore. We can just reuse them into the next version, the next phones we're going to make. If there's metal, like metal can be recycled actually pretty easily. And so how can we do this in a more efficient way? So the company takes full responsibility for the product that they sell to their users.
Okay, one of the reasons I think that doesn't happen more often is because the easier you make it for yourself to re-extract all the raw materials, the more easy you make it for other people too, and there might be some of the problem. Anyhow, back to the interview with you. You said you're back in Belgium now. Does that mean your work in Shanghai has come to an end, or do you still do that?
No, look, yeah, so I have finished, yes, my work. I left China, that's how I explain it. I left China. Okay, after I left China, I came here, so the work still my work, of course, the essence still continues, but my company has, yeah, I the company, the activity in Shanghai has closed now, and it's not going on over there anymore. So that's now I'm focused, I'm where my feet are, I'm focused on what's next here.
So, but when you were at the end of your stay in China, if I remember well, you've been going through the whole country to meet innovators. Can you talk to us about that?
I would love to talk about that. I knew in 2021 that my that I was going to round up my time in China. And so throughout my last years of working in China, I had met really incredible people who inspired me and who were really at the brink of creating solutions and new ways of living and working that in my eyes were part of the future. And we always talked about like how we would work together, but we never really got to that point because I worked with multinationals and it's difficult to bridge that gap. But then I thought I still want them to be heard. I still want their stories to be exposed. And so I rented an electric car and for 3 months I drove around the country and I was living as sustainable as possible to go and meet them where they live, where their communities are, and to interview and understand what is sustainability to them, how do they do it in China under the legislation over there, with the plans of the president over there. And I interviewed them, the plan is to turn this into a documentary one day. I filmed, I took pictures. And so I did this for 3 months. I would have loved to do it for longer, but time wasn't on my side for that. But I did it for 3 months and I loved it. It confirmed what I was feeling about sustainability in China specifically. It confirmed so many things that I knew the country would do, and it did in the 7-8 years that I was there. It was an incredible experience, and I really felt like I was in my place. And so I would love to actually continue this here in Europe as well, because I think the solutions come from there, most of them. And yeah, that's what I'm aiming to do still now, is to find people who are at the beginning of these solutions and who make it exciting and innovative and basically take concepts of the natural world, but then combine them in our 21st century lifestyle and way of thinking with technology. So I'm currently writing a book about my adventure in China. It's called Kailu. Kailu in Chinese means open roads. And yeah, I'm very excited about writing the book, and I really hope I get to do much more of these expeditions and research and documentaries in the future.
Oh, that sounds like a book that I'm looking forward to read.
Yeah, definitely.
So that leads us nicely on to the next question. Where would you see the difference and the similarities between the recycling situation in China and over here in Europe?
I think Europe is pretty broad to take as one example, because like within Europe, of course, we have different countries who recycle in very different ways. Yeah. For example, in Belgium, we've always been pretty good. But France, for example, no offense, but has been terrible at recycling and sorting their waste. So it's kind of difficult to take Europe as a whole. But what I will say is that I think, let me start with China and the way that they do it. China is a country that is the things really long term. So for them, they have actually invested in recycling factories throughout the country. And so they have really invested in infrastructure first. So because I have friends who have been working on this on those infrastructures over there. And so China first builds the infrastructure to the problem and then starts with the education and the soft marketing, if you want, of getting people to adapt their habits so that they can solve that problem. So China is like very big plans first, and then the people will follow once the infrastructure is in place. So it happened overnight when people in China suddenly had to start recycling and sorting their waste, and they had no idea why or how or what they had to do. But overnight, people and companies were fined if they were not recycling their waste properly. Mm-hmm. It's extremely efficient. I think China is also they also always look for the value, like how can this be an investment on the long term? So they, again, everything that they do is always with that long-term thing. So they're not thinking like, what can be my return in 6 months, in 1 year, in 2 years? We're talking 5, 10, 15 years, because the country as a whole functions as a culture. It doesn't function from one president to another as much as here in Europe. So I here in Europe, I feel it's less top down, it's more like bottom up, where like companies will and entrepreneurs will see a problem and then they would build the infrastructure or do the education. But I feel like in Europe, again, like there are not that many actually countries who are able to process the very waste that they recycle, because for many years, the waste they sorted and recycled was just sent to China. Mm-hmm. And China was dealing with the waste. And if it's not China, it's probably somewhere in Africa or somewhere else. Yeah. So Europe is like very good at the education part and like the morals and the values and all of this. But when it comes to actually processing it, it's we're still like getting there, I feel. Now, again, like I think the entrepreneurial world here in Europe has really like made it easier to like not send it to China and to like shorten that circuit. But again, I've just been here for 5 months, so I don't know the depths of it, but that's kind of what I feel, what I see, and what I read.
Okay.
Okay. When it comes to sustainability and circularity, there are often trade-offs between idealism and pragmatism. Could you comment on that?
Yes. So I always say that it's everything is a process, and I believe I am someone who is pretty idealistic, but... And I know that we probably would never will reach a perfect circular material world. But what excites me is the process of getting there. It's the change that I see in the people, in the mentality, in the solutions that are offered. And so I think idealism is what has driven societies and cultures since that there's been humans really forward in progress. So I think idealism is important because it drives inspiration, it's what makes us dream. But of course, it has to be paired with a certain pragmatism of like, okay, that's a dream, but what can we do today, right now? Like, how can we make that first step? How can we make it so that we can make other steps into the future? So I think both are incredibly important. I come from an entrepreneurial background. My grandmothers and my mother and everyone, all the women in my family are entrepreneurs. So I also understand the business side of it. So when I go see my clients, I mean, of course, like they're interested in my experience and things like this, but I also very much understand that I'm not selling them just a dream or an inspiration or just a pretty idea. I'm like, that's what I'm going for. That's a dream. But of course, like I'm patient in that way where I understand that certain steps need to be done before we can even reach that, or even just the first step of that. So I think both are incredibly important. I don't give more value to one than the other. I think they're equally important, but I don't want to discard idealism at all. I think that's the problem today, is that I feel in Europe, we're definitely in China as well, actually, even more so in China, we're very pragmatic, but I think that only works so long. I think the idealism has to be brought back to the table as well, just as a goal ahead, as a light at the end of the tunnel, if you want.
Very good.
Yeah, we like that.
I would like that. So today, if you have to compare the way of working in China and Europe, what do you prefer?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't worked much in Europe, so I don't really, I have yet to understand how people work here. But what I will say that what I love about China is, again, the relationship that you have with the people that you work with. Again, like Chinese people are very long-term, like they think very long-term. So you often hear people say like, oh, like this Chinese person screwed me over, or like I can't trust them or whatever. But for Chinese people, it's really important that they trust you. And if they trust you, then it's like, it's almost like it's a lifetime of friendship, of partnership, of business. And that trust doesn't come easy, doesn't come fast. It's something that has to be tested with time. At the beginning, I was resistant to it because I didn't understand why things took so long, like why certain relationships took so long to come to fruition. But looking back now, like when I see like how certain people like would always show up or be very consistent in the way that they approach their clients, their colleagues, their partners, then it makes sense. And today I have really this thing where like, if I don't like the person who's sitting in front of me, I don't want to work with you, because if I don't like you, if I don't trust you, like how can we build something that's long-term? And that's something that I really learned in China, and that's something that I really value, and I'm keeping it with me now. Because again, we're all human. If I trust you, I also understand that that you're not perfect, that I'm not perfect. And that trust also comes with trusting that I I can be vulnerable with you. I also loved the pace in China. It's things go incredibly fast. Here it's a bit slower, but I don't think it's bad that it's slower here. I think it gives more time to reflect and to better understand certain things. In China, it's really like, let's just go. And if we have a problem, we'll figure it out. And if we fail, at least we know we failed within a couple of months instead of in a couple of years. Mm. So again, I really like that way of thinking and of approaching life. And it's just very honest. And I like that. I like this very honest way of working. I barely signed any contracts in China. And that's, for me, being a Belgian, that's like, we love stability and not signing contracts with your accountant or like with certain clients for getting paid. It's like, what? But again, like, when problems did arise, like, we just sat down and we just discussed how to get out of it. Like, so again, of course I did sign contracts. I have many of those as well, but again, it's a very different way of approaching work. And I like it. It's just honest.
Thank you very much for that.
Okay.
We have a last question that we ask to every leader in sustainability we interview. And it is, if you had a magic wand, what would you like to change in the next 3 years?
In the next 3 years, I would love that people connected more with the natural world and find solutions there. I think I would, heightened awareness of that.
Okay.
Very
well, thank you very, very much, Elise.
That was a very enlightening interview.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, honestly. Like,
and please let us know when your book is out.
It was our pleasure.
Yeah, it was a very good pleasure. And as soon as your book is out, we'll share it with our listeners also.
You've been listening to Leaders in Sustainability, podcast series by Trianon Scientific Communication. If you would like to know more about sustainable development and or corporate social responsibility, please visit www.science-by-trianon.com, where you will find our blog and contact details, and where you can subscribe to our newsletter.